Now that cannabis products are legal in New York and New Jersey and in many other states, I think it's kedai to reassess the issue of smoking marijuana and using marijuana products in general, to revisit that issue in light of the recent changes in the legislation, but particularly because cannabis is available not only in the traditional way in which it was used beforehand or in the past, which was through smoking, which has its own complications and associations that are accompanied by that, but it's now available in many different formats, of course, in the manner or in the vehicle of edibles, which come in brownies or chocolates or gummies that are infused with THC, which is a psychoactive ingredient in cannabis. And these items, of course, which are edible, would present an additional dilemma, additional issue above and beyond the use of cannabis in general, and that is that these items might require a hashgacha, that they have to have kosher supervision since they are consumed. So, you know, in the same manner as other foods. So traditionally, the kosher, the larger national kosher agencies have refused to give kosher supervision to cannabis edibles outside of the context of those that are used for medicinal use. They do approve of CBD products, which don't have the psychoactive ingredient THC, and even though in recent months there has been a lot of discussion that you can derive, they can distill the THC ingredient from even from certain CBD products, the national kosher certifying agencies have removed their hashgacha on those CBD products that do have the psychoactive ingredient of THC. So for the most part, they've refrained from giving a hashgacha to edibles. There are loan operators, perhaps, or Rabbanim who are giving hashgacha on their own, but the larger organizations that we're all accustomed to relying upon do not typically give a hashgacha to cannabis edibles. Which, of course, presents an additional issue that if these things aren't kosher, we could discuss, you know, using cannabis in general. But if the edibles that they're being delivered in are not kosher, that presents an additional problem that they're simply no different than other food which isn't edible. But we really need to analyze this issue, whether or not a hashgacha should be given to edibles. We need to analyze or to separate two different pieces to the discussion. The first is using cannabis or marijuana in general, and then whether or not cannabis edibles should be given a hashgacha. In terms of using marijuana in general, so there was a landmark tshuva that was written by Rav Moshe back in 1973 in Yoredei Chelek Gimel Simen Lamed Hev Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe identifies numerous problems with using cannabis, with using marijuana. So the cynic might say, well, if Rav Moshe has so many reasons, I think he has six or seven reasons here why one should not use marijuana or cannabis products, that itself indicates or implies that none of the reasons are all, you know, all that compelling, and that's exactly why Rav Moshe had to bring six or seven reasons. So I say to that 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 is yeshiva learning gone awry, because in the Beis Medrash that is certainly true. If Tosfos brings four terutzim to one kasha, that implies that none of the terutzim were all that convincing, and that's why Tosfos needed four terutzim, because none of them really, you know, hit the nail on the head. However, it could be, and I don't think though that applies here to Rav Moshe. I think it could be that Rav Moshe brings six or seven reasons because this is so objectionable that it happens to touch legitimately on six or seven different areas. It's not because none of them are sufficient to answer the question. They all might be sufficient independently to discourage one from using cannabis or from using marijuana. So the fact that Rav Moshe brings six or seven doesn't diminish the significance of any of the reasons that he cites as being somehow lacking or insufficient. Mashal l'mad avadim is if we were discussing gambling and the harmful and destructive effects that that might have in a person's life, we could begin with the Gemara's, you know, criticism of it, that eino oisik b'yeshuva sholeilam, you're not engaged in a productive endeavor in this world, as opposed to those who are creating things and building things. Yeah, so, you know, it's a bad profession. It's probably a bad investment, too, in that the deck is stacked against you, literally, and you probably don't have a good chance of succeeding, so it's a waste of money. But also, right, it's addictive, and you could end up losing lots more money than you might have initially intended, and it's really bad for Shalom Bayis, because here you have a couple, potentially, that are both working very hard for their money, and here the, you know, one party in the marriage is taking the money and using it in a way that is entirely, you know, does not contribute towards the mission of the family in general. So it's bad for Shalom Bayis, it's bad, you know, for personal health, and because it's a very addictive activity, it's bad, you know, investment-wise, and it's a bad profession. that doesn't diminish the significance of any one of those four, the fact that there happen to be three other contributing factors as to why it's really distasteful and unadvisable. So the fact that there are many reasons doesn't, in this context, doesn't mean that any one of them is less convincing, that is not sufficiently convincing. It just happens to be really is a really negative activity and touches on a lot of different areas. But it could also be that Rav Moshe cites so many reasons to kind of convey that this is really against everything that we stand for. It's like the third rail or the fifth chayuk of Shulchan Aruch, meaning it goes above and beyond any one individual sif in Shulchan Aruch or sif katan in the Mishnah Berurah. This is really against the ethos of Yiddishkeit and what Torah and Mitzvahs and Yerushalayim is all about, and that's why Rav Moshe cites so many reasons why it is why one should not use marijuana, cannabis products today. The cannabis edibles. But let's just go through the few reasons that Rav Moshe brings, and we'll see how that might translate into our more current situation. So the first reason that Rav Moshe brings over here on the second line of Vayisalav Chadashu Makalkel Mechales Haguf is because it's something that deteriorates and harms the body, and therefore is prohibited because of the pasuk Vinishmartem Oed Lanafshu Seichem, the pasuk in Parshas Vayeschanan. Now, I presume that Rav Moshe here is talking about smoking marijuana, and of course smoking itself, whatever you're smoking, has really harmful effects on the body, as we know way more about that now than Rav Moshe knew in 1973. And certainly we would echo that and put this together. Smoking pot should be no difference than smoking marijuana, tobacco. Of course, there are certain things that are unique to tobacco that might not apply to marijuana, but smoking in general is going to be really bad for the lungs and all that goes along with it. So it could be Rav Moshe's discussion here is really more about smoking marijuana, which would not necessarily carry over to cannabis edibles. At the same time, I think that it's also possible that Rav Moshe understood that cannabis in general, being high in general, is bad for the body. That's something that's being discussed and debated currently. There hasn't been enough research done yet to know what the effects of long-term cannabis use are in the body, and it might depend on when a person starts using it and to what concentrations he's using it and how frequently it's being used, and all of that needs to be studied. But it's certainly, the jury is still out whether or not that could be a really dangerous thing for the body. It's certainly, it starts earlier in life and it's more frequent and more long-term and at higher concentrations. Could be something that's very dangerous for the body. But I think, just more practically, is that over-consumption of cannabis or THC can occur more readily in cannabis edibles. So if anything, it might actually be worse than smoking pot. So in one sense, it might be better because smoking has a lot of deleterious effects that might not carry over to edibles, but at the same time, it's much easier to overdose on edibles because it takes longer for the THC to have an effect on the body, and a person might think, well, maybe I didn't eat enough, and they eat more and more and more, and therefore they're more likely to overdose. Most of the overdoses in marijuana, I understand, come from edibles, not from smoking. Children can certainly get into edibles without even realizing what they're eating. It could be that there's just a lot of dangers that go along with consuming edibles, even if it's not inherent to the cannabis itself. The state that it elicits could make things dangerous, like driving cars or, doing motor functions in general. Operating in the world, a person, might trip and fall or do something else that's dangerous while they're high, which is much more, likely to happen than if a person would be of sound mind and body. So I think there's a lot of dangers that go along with it, even if it's not the traditional dangers that we usually associate with smoking tobacco or smoking pot. So the first thing is chadashu makalka mechala saguf. Somewhat, the jury is still out on that, but of course, somewhat, that would carry over to all cannabis use, not just to smoking cannabis. But then Rav Moshe says, even if you'll confine certain individuals where that might not affect them, or certain situations where that might not be applicable, at the same time, makalka hu as hadas, it minimizes one's cognitive and intellectual capabilities. You're not able to understand things properly. So now it could be, again, here that Rav Moshe is referring to the belief that long-term cannabis use diminishes a person's cognitive processing ability. And this is then would be included in that same umbrella. A person shouldn't do things that damage the body or damage the intellect or damage your cognitive abilities. There's a similar comment from the brother of the Vilna Gaon in his Sefer Malas HaTorah, commenting the Pasuk in Parashat Vayeschanan with regards to Maamar Har-Sinai, Raki Shomer Lecha Shmon Avshecha Miyod Pen Tishkach HaSadvar Masher Ro'u Einecha, that that a person has to be careful not to forget anything from Maimon Har Sinai, including all the Torah that we learn there. And that's what the Mishnah says in Masechtas Avos, Hashecheach Dover Echa Mi Mishnasa, a person who forgets any part of his learning is in violation of this pasuk. So many Mefarshim ask, well, forgetting happens naturally. You know, it's part of the human condition. We'd all love to improve our memory, improve our recall. Certain part of forgetting is just impossible to overcome. So how could it be that we condemn a person who forgets part of his learning as in violation of this pasuk, forgetting Maimon Har Sinai? After all, we'd love to remember everything if possible. It's just simply impossible. So the brother of the Vilna Gaon writes in the Maala Satora is that no, what it's referring to is a person who does something deliberately, an activity that causes him to forget his learning, meaning something that causes your cognitive abilities to deteriorate. Like, you know, using cannabis products, like smoking marijuana, that might harm the brain cells, or might not allow them to develop, or might, limit one's cognitive processing abilities. So then, that would be prohibited based on this pasuk. Forget about it. The mind is also part of the body. But also because of Raki a person is doing something that's causing himself to forget. However, it could be Ramosha is saying something much more broad, not limited to v'nishmartim v'el l'nafsho seichem, but a little bit more fundamental in that it undermines the very spark of divinity that we all have within each one of us. Because, of course, the pasuk tells us in Parshas Bereishis that we were all created b'tzelem Elokim, in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam is quick to point out at the beginning of the Mor Nevuchim, Rav Chaim Volozhin has a discussion about this at the beginning of Nefesh HaChaim, that doesn't mean that we all, just like we have a body, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also has a body. The Rambam claims a person who believes that is an apikoris. So if that's not what we have in common with the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're created b'tzelem Elokim, the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our physical image, what then do we have in common with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So different Mefarshim identify different qualities and different characteristics that perhaps, we have that are similar to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim claims that Tzelem Elokim refers to the fact that we have seichel, we have intellect, we have the ability to understand things. And the Rambam writes there from Ibn HaSeichel HaElokei HaMedubak Bo Shehu B'Tzelem Elokim Hu B'Dmuso. Our ability to understand things is itself the spark of divinity that's in each one of us, and that's similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what distinguishes us from the animal kingdom. So therefore, it stands to reason that a person who diminishes his intellectual capabilities is undermining the very Tzelem Elokim, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed us and made us special and elevated us above the animal kingdom. And maybe that's what Ramesh is driving at here. Mekalka Huas Hadas, it limits our intellectual capabilities as undermining the Tzelem Elokim. The Rambam himself seems to make this point in his Perusha Mishnayos in Maseches Chagiga, where the Mishnah tells us, Kol Shaloi Chasa Kvod Kainoi Roi Loi Shaloi Bal Yolam. Anybody who's not careful about the covet of the Ribbono Shel Olam, better he never would have been created. So what does it mean he's not careful about the covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Says the Rambam, HaKavana Bazeh, Mi Shaloi Chas Al Sichloi, a person who's not careful about his intellect, to preserve it, to enhance it, and instead diminishes it by doing these kind of harmful activities. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, in the Sefer Bekari Shemuel, Parshas Shpatim, actually claims that this is the meaning of the pasuk, or the iser, of taking a bribe. Where the pasuk says, V'sheichad lo sikach, ki sheichad ya'aver pichim. It covers over the eyes of those who are intelligent, because a bribe limits our ability to assess the situation that's being presented to Dayanim. And he's forced into this explanation because the issur of taking sheichad, of course, is separate from the issur of hatoyas mishpat, of perverting justice, of issuing a faulty or wrong verdict in favor of one party or the other. That's loisata mishpat loisakir panim. You're not supposed to show favorites, and you're not supposed to pervert justice. What then is the prohibition of taking a bribe? I mean, that's even if you get the judgment right. Even if you issue a correct verdict, you're still prohibited from taking a bribe. Why should that be prohibited? So Shmuel Birnbaum is forced to say that it must be because even if you end up getting the verdict right, despite the bribe, you limited your capabilities of assessing the situation, the facts on the ground, because you took this bribe. And that itself is the focus of the prohibition. Therefore, he writes over here, it's not a prohibition on taking the bribe because it causes perversion of justice, because it covers over your eyes, it makes you into a person who's not able to process what's taking place in front of you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us these abilities to understand and to process, and you're throwing it away by taking the bribe. Yeah, what do you say, Daniel?
So why would alcohol be mutter? That also definitely limits your capabilities.
Okay, we'll get to your point. We'll get to your point. Give me a minute. For sure. Okay, but let's go through it. Maisha, and we'll see how that carries over to alcohol. Okay, so that's what I think Rav Moshe perhaps is driving at over here, is that it limits your cognitive abilities, which is either subsumed within v'nishmarti olam nafsho seichem, or perhaps even a little bit more broad, more fundamental, is that it undermines the tzelem elokim with which we were all created. Then Rav Moshe moves on to a more practical issue, and that is that a person is unable to daven or learn after he has, is high on pot. No different than a person who, of course, is drunk on wine. Getting, to your point, to bring it a little bit back to the alcohol discussion, that there are, of course, similarities. And just like a person can't daven or can't learn if he's drunk, so too a person can't daven or can't learn if he's high on marijuana or is he in enough cannabis edibles that he is, is high and not in touch, so much with reality. And this is based on the Gemara Maseftas Erevin. Here's Samuel Tadam, but Alpha, the Gemara quotes Amar Vihuda Mashmul, Shas Revius Yayin Al Yoyer. When a person drinks a Revius of wine, he shouldn't paskin a Shaila. It's interesting, Rev Shefter. We once had a bris here in the yeshiva, this is before I was a Rebbe, and they were giving out l'chaims at the bris. And they were going there, all the Rebbeim, a lot of Rebbeim were there, and they were standing in the front of the old base medrash. And they went over to Rav Shechter, they offered Rav Shechter a lechayim. Rav Shechter said, I can't take a lechayim, I'm about to go say shir. And Ashayis Revius Yayin Al Yoyra. The person drinks a Revius of wine, he shouldn't pass in a shayla. Now, this was a schnapps, which is less than a Revius, but presumably wine is in the shir of a Revius. Other alcoholic beverages, a little bit more concentrated, have a higher percentage of alcohol, would probably be Revius of Yayin, the equivalent of Revius of wine. Whatever the alcohol content is, Revius of wine, carried over to that. It's just like people make Kiddush sometimes on Shabbos on a small glass of scotch. So too, the halacha of Revius Yayin Al Yoyra should probably apply to even that little shakas as well. So Rav Shechter didn't take the L'chaim because he said, I'm about to go say Shir. So they asked him, but one of the other Rebbeim, he did take a L'chaim, and he's also about to go say Shir. So Rav Shechter said, it's okay. His whole Shir is Shaloy Ali with the Hilchasa. So it's not considered to be a Revius. They're not passing any shakas in that Shir. Anyway, whatever. Interesting halacha. But there's another girsa to that Gemara. Not only a person can't paskin a shayla, and of course, that's the highest form of learning when a person is able to culminate his entire learning process and the lumdus and the practical applications to come up with a psak halacha lamaisa. So a person who drinks is unable to engage in that process, but forget about just learning Torah for the moment. Taisus here quotes a girsa of the Rif and the Rambam, and this is actually how we paskin that a shayla revius yayin al yispalel. You're not allowed to daven the chachila after you've drunk a revius of wine, and if it's another substance, presumably when it evokes the same kind of state as you would achieve with a revius of wine. But that's only if you drank a revius, you're not supposed to daven chachila. If you did daven, your tefillah is considered to be a tefillah. But a person who's a shikr, if he's drunk or perhaps high, then not only should you l'chachila not daven, your tefillah. If you did daven, your tefillah is a tefillah. It's not considered to be a tefillah at all, and you're not yotze the mitzvah of tefillah. First of all, this applies, by the way, to Purim, parenthetically, just getting back to Purim for a moment. This applies to Purim. A lot of times after people have the Suda of Purim, so they come to Daven Maariv. So, Hashayis Revius Yayin, Al Yispalel. If you drink a Revius of wine, you're not supposed to Daven Chachila. If you did, the davening is okay. But the Yeved, person is a shikr, he's really not supposed to be davening at all. And Tfilos Teva. So if a person is shikr, he really shouldn't be davening Maariv. At that point, he should wait for the wine, the effects of the wine to subside. But how are any of us able to daven l'chadchila after drinking revius of wine? And this happens on Shabbos sometimes. A person comes from a Suda, and then he's about to go daven Mincha. A person's coming from a Purim Suda, and he's about to go daven Maariv. So the Ramah quotes two one side of the Kula, and the Mishnah Berurah has a second. One side of the Kula is over here in Hilchos Tfilos, Simen Sadi Tesiv Gimel, is that perhaps our wine is not as strong as their wine was, and a revius of wine, when the Gemara says Ashrei Revius Yayin Al Yispalel, it's because it affected them. A revius of wine today doesn't necessarily affect people the same degree. And particularly because the Mishnah Berurah adds that on Shabbos or Yom Tov, we're typically doing so in the middle of a Suda. A person is having the wine in the middle of a meal, and that also dulls the effects of the wine. So a lot of times, if it's in the middle of a larger meal, and our wines are not as strong, as intense as their wines were, so maybe this halacha, even a person could have a l'chachila after drinking a revius of wine, certainly if it was in the context of a Suda on a Shabbos or Yom Tov. Then the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Yamsha Shlomo from the Marshal that perhaps our kavana in tefillah isn't supposed to be, isn't where it is supposed to be in general. So yeah, if you're, kavana for tefillah is really supposed to be up here, then Hashem's Revius Yayin Al Yispalel, because you're not going to be able to achieve that high kavana that you're used to. But if our kavana that we're used to is already compromised, So then we don't necessarily have to restrict one from davening even lechachli after drinking revius of wine, because anyway our kavanah isn't where it's supposed to be. But if a person is a shikar, which means he doesn't understand that he's in shul davening, he doesn't understand that he's standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the words that he's saying, so then he's not supposed to be davening at all. And certainly if a person is high, he can't daven, he can't learn, and therefore Rav Moshe says, since all of Yiddishkeit, we strive to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through davening, through learning, through doing mitzvahs, a person is a shikar, he's high, he's not able to do that, certainly that undermines, you know, the trajectory that, you know, the purpose, as we understand, you know, life is supposed to be about, is connecting with Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore this would be something that would prevent us from achieving our goal. So that's Rav Moshe's second problem, which is a little bit more technical, is that it prevents a person from davening and learning. So the first was, v'nishmata lo nafsho seichem, preserving telem alakim. Second, a little bit more practical in terms of davening and learning. But then Rav Moshe brings up in Ois Gimel is that it creates a growing desire within the person for more. You know, it's an addictive activity. And I think where Rav Moshe is driving at is the comment of the Gemara Masechtas Pesachim over here, Kufiud Gimel Med Aleph, Ois Ches on the sheet, where the Gemara says, Amar Le Rav Lechia Berei, Loi Tishti Sama. You shouldn't consume medications. And Rashi there explains the reason why you shouldn't do so. Lo Silma Lishtoi Samim. You shouldn't accustom yourself to taking these medications. They should take for the hen veses, because they are addictive. You have to take them with regularity. If that's something that occurs regularly. So if you did it once, you're going to need to do it again. Your neshama is going to be asking these things again and again. You're going to need it. V'tavazir mos. And it's going to cost you a lot of money. In the end of the day, that's where this is going to lead. Then he adds, v'shnachrina, you shouldn't accustom yourself to doing it, because kol mili, demali lahai, kosher lahai, gemar masechta pesachim. Certain things that are good for one are bad for the other. Meaning there are side effects to every medication. And of course, there are harmful side effects to these kinds of substances as well, such as cannabis products. So the first thing is that there are harmful side effects, which we really already covered under the banner of Nishmartan Lo Nafsho Seichem. But then there is also that it is an addictive activity. Now, of course, I think that's also something that's still being studied and debated. How addictive are cannabis products? And there's two competing perspectives on that. And, you know, to what degree is it a gateway drug to other substances, which are certainly addictive is also something which is debated, but I think there the consensus is more or less, you know, even if it's only anecdotal, they are addictive activities, if not as addictive as perhaps, you know, cannabis can be addictive, if not as addictive as other substances, and it certainly can lead a person to other substances, which are certainly, without a doubt, addictive. So therefore, Rav Moshe writes that this is something that creates a greater taiva within the body, and it's going to end up in a bad place. And the parasha of Ensayra Umayra, which is what Rav Moshe brings up in the course of this argument, teaches us that we have to be concerned not only where we are now, but where this path inevitably will take us. And just like we, you know, the Ensayra Umayra, we act early to nip it in the bud, lest it take us to a place which is even worse, so too, we also have to act with foresight and to understand that we should refrain from doing an activity which, down the road, could lead a person to significant danger, you know, and sadness and problems. So Rav Moshe's third reason, right, the first, Nishmat Om Nasar Sheikha, preserving Selim Mokim, the second, it prevents us from davening and learning. The third is because it's an addictive behavior that could lead a person, ultimately, to problems down the road. And I think the parsha ben Sarah Meir is what encourages us, what really demands of us, even if Rav Moshe says, even if it's not actionable with Malkus, that demands of us to be careful from engaging in harmful activities, right? We killed a 13-year-old because we see there's no way he's going to break free from his addictions of drinking wine and eating meat and whatever else he's engaged in, that we said we just have to nip this in the bud because there's no way that this person is going to be able to rehabilitate himself. So too, that parsha ben Sarah Meir teaches us we also have to be careful from falling into that pitfall of engaging in these activities, which down the road could lead us to a very harmful place. The fourth reason that Rav Moshe brings up is, of course, the overarching principle, that of Kedoshim Tiyu, at the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim. And the Ramban famously writes that what does Kedoshim Tiyu require of us? What is it mandate? That we be careful even with those things that are permitted, such as, says the Ramban, Basar V'Yayin, meat and wine, not to use them, not to abuse them, not to use so in a way that is over-indulging. And Rav Moshe writes, and I don't think that it's a stretch, that to become high on cannabis for recreation is itself something that's a violation of Kedoshim Tiyu, of being a Novel B'Shus HaTorah, a glutton with Torah license, because this is not, you know, what a Torah life and what a holy life is really supposed to be about. This is abusing wine, abusing that kind of a substance. And that's why Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, well-known Pesach in Eretz Yisrael, writes today over here in the Sefer Meholei Torah that he believes that using these substances to get high is a violation of a violation of Kedoshim to you. Okay, so we had a number of reasons to believe, or, you know, to argue why getting high on cannabis products, smoking pot, would all be prohibited. It's a violation of the Tzelem Elokim, undermines, corrodes the Tzelem Elokim, because it prevents a person from learning and davening as much as we would like. Because you know, we have to be concerned it's an addictive activity, or could lead to other addictive activities, and the Parsha Ben Tzora Mora warns us about that, and also because of the Parsha of Kedoshim Tiyu, this seems to be an overindulgence and an abuse of something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, you know, that exists in this world, and we're doing it along the lines of a novel Brishus HaTorah. The question that begs is, well, how is this different than alcohol, right? Alcohol exists in the community. And we don't have the same kind of movement or these kinds of campaigns to weed it out, no pun intended. So why do we kind of give alcohol a pass that we're not willing to give to cannabis products? And I think, again, here the cynic might say that, well, that's because this was stigmatized by the legalities of it and the war on drugs. But in the end of the day, it's really no different than alcohol, and this is just politics. You know, and they chalk it up to that. So there might be some truth to that. I don't deny that the stigma and taboo certainly existed because it was illegal, and we'll see how things move in the future. But that's not the. I think there is a much bigger distinction between the two. But first, it needs to be said that even with regards to alcohol, becoming drunk and abusing alcohol is just as distasteful as a person who uses cannabis edibles or smokes pot to get high. Yes, being drunk is not approved. We don't accept that. That's just as bad as getting high, for sure. And that's not acceptable either. So much so, the Rambam writes, and there are many statements of Chazal that bemoan those who get drunk and abuse wine as, you know, something that's a seriously negative activity. But the Rambam sums it up in Hilchos Deos Perkei Halacha Gimel, v'chol mishtaker hareza choite umeguna umafsid chachmasa. A person who gets drunk recreationally is a person who's a sinner, and it's a embarrassing and degrading practice. And a person who does so loses his wisdom. Of course, it's a terrible thing. And even in the context of a mitzvah, like a sudas yamtiv, to overdo it is an abuse of what the alcohol, you know, the role that alcohol is supposed to play, you know, even on a Suda Avyantif, right? On Suda Avyantif, ain't simcha, wabasa v'yayin, you're supposed to have meat and wine. However, the Rambam writes in that context, in Hilchos Yamtiv Perek Vav Lachachav, k'sha adam oicha v'shoyse v'sameach v'rega lo yimashech v'yayin v'shoycha v'kalak v'roish. You're not supposed to overdo it. And a person who does overdo it, that's not Simchas Yamtiv, that's haylulus v'sichlus. That's vanity and silliness, you know, and stupidity. That itself is not what the mitzvah demands at all. And in fact, that is equally frowned upon as would be getting high or something like that as well. Even so much so, by the way, that everyone is bothered, right, with the mitzvah on Purim that the Gemara has over here, Masechtas Megillah, Zayin Amabez, Chai Venish Upsumi Bapuria, Ad Lo Yada, Benar Haman, Lebarach Mordechai, that a person is obligated to become, you know, to drink wine until he doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman and Lebarach Mordechai. So many Mepharshim are bothered. Well, how could that be? This goes against everything we stand for. So much so that the Beis Yosef says in Hilchos Purim, quotes over here from the Orchas Chaim, with the comments on that Gemara, Chai Vinish Upsumi Bapuria, Loishi Yishtaker, Shashichrus Isser, Loishi Yishtaker, not that a person become drunk, Shashichrus Isser Gomer. Of course it's prohibited. Isser Gomer. It's prohibited. Ve'elacha Veira G'doyla Mizu, there's no greater Aveira than this. Because when a person's inhibitions are removed and the boundaries are gone, anything is possible. So of course it's terrible. We're commanded to say the Torah and wine does just the opposite. It could lead to gilui arayis, shvichus damim, the kama aver zulasan, ach sheyishta yoytsim limud ma'at. Rather, what is the mitzvah on Purim? Is only to drink more than a person is accustomed to, and that's the way the Ramah paskins in Hilchos Purim that a person should not become drunk. Of course not. Rather, a person should drink wine, more wine than he's accustomed to, and. Why is that? Because, and the Bir Halach there explains, because all of the mitzvahs of Purim took place in the context of wine, and therefore, on Purim, in an attempt to recreate the context in which the miracles took place, we have Suda, and we drink wine in the midst of the Suda. Therefore, the Bir Halach over here quotes the name of the Holy Rabbi in Tomar. Of course, becoming drunk is a terrible thing. How could they command us to do so on Purim? And he explains, they should call on Nisim, it's because all of the Nisim took place in a Mishta Yayin, and therefore, in order to recreate that experience, the drama of Purim, so we also have a Suda together with wine. But not that a person is supposed to become drunk, but more than he's accustomed to in order to label to the Suda's Yayin. Remember, they drank wine as their normal during every Suda. So it wasn't unusual to have wine. How are we going to label this as a Mishde Yayin to recreate that setting in which the miracles of Purim took place? You have to drink Yaisam Ilimuda, more than you would normally drink, to label it as a Mishde Yayin. But not that a person should actually become drunk. And in fact, this Fasemes says back in that Gemara Masechtas Megillah, over there, Oisid Gimel, it's not, of course, the person who's supposed to become drunk that he really doesn't know the difference between Aruham and Baruch Mordechai. It's rather, ad v'loyad v'chal. That's the limit. You should never pass. You should never get to that point. I mean, that's where you're supposed to stop. If you don't understand, you know, the difference between right and wrong, you know, please stop because you've went too far. And that's the side of the Shulchan Aruch. The Yad Ephraim has the same shot. Ad v'loyad v'chal here. He says this, you know. He saw in Ruach HaKodesh, Ad V'loy Ad V'chal. This is not, a person is not supposed to become so drunk that he actually doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. That's not what the Torah is asking us, and the Gemara, the Chazal are asking us to do. The Rambam, actually perhaps is Meduyok like this, Namek Bracha, calls the name of Yisrael Salanter, who also said, Ad V'loy Ad V'chal. The person is never supposed to get to that point. He was actually, has a diuk in the language of the Rambam. The Rambam implies that what the obligation to do is not to become drunk, but to have a suda where you are continuously drinking wine to recreate the setting in which the miracles of Purim took place. That's what the Rambam writes. Kesad hichayv suda zu. How is the suda of Purim supposed to transpire? Sheyochal batsav yisakin suda. Eat meat and have a suda. Vishayse yayin. And you should be drinking wine, actually yishtaker, until a person becomes drunk. So over here, on the bottom line, the Emek Bracha has the deacon language of the Rambam, Shulunim Basar, Kasav Shayoicha Basar. A person should eat Basar, which means once you ate it, you read Yoitse. Inyan Yain, Kasav Vishayse Yain. You should continuously drink wine. But Kasav Yishte Yain. You should drink. Rather, you should be drinking wine. Behind him, Yishum, the mitzvah Shayain, he mitzvah Nimshechas Koayim. The mitzvah is to drink the whole day, to be engaged in a Sudas Yain. To recreate the miracles and the concept in which the miracles of Purim took place. So you should be continuously drinking. If you get to Ad V'loyad, you should stop. It's Ad V'loyad B'chlal. But that's why Rashi also writes, look back in that Gemara Masechtas Megillah, that Rashi writes that the mitzvah is Chayv Inishlu B'sume G'shtaker B'yayin, it's specifically wine, not other alcoholic beverages, certainly not other substances that produce a similar state, like cannabis edibles or stuff. That has no place on Purim at all. And even drinking wine on Purim, certainly other alcoholic beverages have no place on Purim. It's only drinking wine, and even then, it's only in the context of the Suda, because the miracles of Purim took place in a Sudas Yain. It has no place at night, and no place any other part of the day on Purim. And anybody who does so is abusing what the wine of Purim is all about, and is wrong, just as wrong, and we should make a macha, and I think people have made a macha against this, campaign against it. It's wrong, just like, I don't know if they're exactly the same, but cannabis products, abusing them to become high recreationally, is also wrong to the same degree. So I think we are fair in this regard. We do treat wine and alcohol the same way as we treat, these cannabis products and becoming high. That, yeah, it is wrong recreationally for all the same reasons that we mentioned already, that would apply to alcohol too. The more nuanced argument one can make is, no, but one second, come on, please. We use alcohol. If a person doesn't have to become drunk with alcohol, you can have a shaitzer of yisyain, you can have one lechayim. You can do so in moderation. So until more recently, I would have argued that same ability to regulate the use of cannabis products doesn't exist. It's either high or nothing. But the truth of the matter is that that's not true. You can use it incrementally as well, what they now call microdosing. You can have the more commercialized that it becomes, and the more regulated it becomes, the more this availability will exist, and that is to use it in a moderated fashion. You can use cannabis products in the same way that alcohol might be used. Like one cup of wine, like one lechayim, you'll be able to have, let's say one edible that has a similar or comparable amount of THC that produce a similar response, not high versus sober, but somewhere in the middle, like a person who's drinking wine. Then the question really becomes, well, then now, what's the difference between wine and using wine in moderation and using cannabis in moderation? I believe here, too, there are two distinctions that need to be made. And they aren't the same. They aren't the same for two reasons. The first is that alcohol, wine in particular, is a food. And it comes in the context of a food. It's presented in the package of a food. And you know, to draw a parallel from Hilchos Shabbos is a concept called Maichel Briyam. A person is not allowed to take medication on Shabbos, lest you will come to grind the medications on Shabbos, which would be a violation of Teichin, of grinding. So Chazal prohibited us from taking medications on Shabbos. If you need the medication because you're sick, then it's permitted. Person is nafuk mishkav, he's not able to carry on with his activities as he's accustomed to, he's permitted to take medication on Shabbos. But otherwise, generally speaking, you're not supposed to take medication on Shabbos. Yet, at the same time, if there is a food that carries that same medicinal properties as the medication, and healthy people eat this food too, so then even if you're sick, you can take the food or eat the food in order to seek relief from your symptoms that you're suffering from. So let's say a person is not sick, right, to the degree that he's permitted to take medication. He's not feeling great, but he's not sick. So he typically wouldn't be allowed to take medication on Shabbos. But there's a food that has the same properties as that medication. So then he's allowed to eat that food. Like, oh, mashal, a person is with a cold. But it's not nafal lemishkov. He's not a chayla yet. Okay, something's bothering him. But if you eat chicken soup, it'll help him feel better. Yeah, but healthy people eat chicken soup too. So even if it has a therapeutic value, but it comes in the package of a Maichel Briyim, that healthy people do this too, well, then it's permitted, even though you're doing so for health reasons. Or for example, a person really shouldn't exercise on Shabbos for health reasons, similar to using medications. But let's say I'm taking a walk. Healthy people who are not doing, regular people just going, to enjoy themselves on Shabbos will take a walk. It's not dafka that it's in the place of exercise, which has a kind of health maintenance, side to it. This is, we're just taking a walk to see what's around and to be misanik b'ainik Shabbos. So since healthy people do that too, or people aren't doing so for exercise, but that's considered to be Maichel Briyim, even if I do have in mind the exercise aspects of it, it will be permitted on Shabbos, because that's considered to be Maichel Briyim. Healthy people are doing it too. And it's like, it comes in that package. And when it comes in that package, so then it's treated differently in the eyes of halacha. And just like in Hilchos Shabbos, we have that distinction. I think here too, we should have, that's a similar distinction. Wine comes in the form of Maichel Briyim. It's that was the common beverage of the time. So it's true, it does have a similar effect, in moderation as microdosing a cannabis edible. But there is the distinction in that wine comes in the package of, in the form of a food, which has, which is consumed by people who aren't searching for that kind of response to that kind of state. And therefore, it is treated differently in the eyes of halacha. Even more stronger forms of alcohol, let's say, a scotch, is a barley and water, but these are food items. As opposed to, or wheat, water, as opposed to cannabis, which is a plant, which is not edible, and is a medication that you can infuse into food items, but it is not fundamentally a food, and therefore it's not considered to be Maichel Briyim. You would only consume it in order to have that psychoactive response, to have a conscious, change in your state of consciousness, and therefore it's treated differently in the eyes of halacha. But for that reason, by the way, I believe that recreational drug use, even if you could get over all of the other hurdles that we mentioned until now, would be prohibited on a Shabbos, because a person's not sick. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes over here that even if a person takes medication, lechaze gufoy, he's not sick necessarily, but it makes him stronger, or changes, something about him, would also be prohibited on Shabbos. That's why exercise is also on Shabbos. It's like a medicinal activity, even though no one's sick necessarily, because it strengthens the body. Strengthening the body is also included in the Isser of Refuah b'Shabbos. That's why some hold vitamins are also on Shabbos, because vitamins are also lechazek gufo. Some treat vitamins as food supplements, others treat them as medication. But if it is a medication, then it would be prohibited on Shabbos, even if it's just lechazek gufo. So I think recreational drug use. If a person can't sleep at night and they need a sleeping pill, okay, that's fine. Then he's sick. His body's not functioning normally. But to have recreational drug use, like an edible that has medication laced within it, that probably prohibited on Shabbos for another, it's prohibited during the week for all the reasons we mentioned until now, but prohibited more so on Shabbos because of the issue of, of taking medication on Shabbos. One could argue if it's infused within an edible, that now it's in a food package, that should be treated as food on Shabbos and not be considered as a medication. I would, if I had to draw a parallel to it, I would say that that's similar to the discussion that Rabbi Moshe has in Shlomo Zalman, that they debate. Let's say a person needs to take a medication on Shabbos, but they're not entitled to do so because they're not sick. But they would like to take it. What if they put it in yogurt before Shabbos? So now it's in the yogurt. So Shlomo Zalman says, so now it's a food. Now you can take it on Shabbos, not a medication. But Rav Moshe disagrees. Rav Moshe says, no, it's not a food. Come on. That's yogurt that's laced with medication. that's still taking medication on Shabbos. So too over here, according to Rabbi Moshe, if you have edibles that are laced with cannabis, you know, with THC or cannabis, so then it seems to me that that's that should be the same debate between Rabbi Moshe and Shlomo Zalman, whether on Shabbos we should treat that as food or that would be considered taking medication, be prohibited on Shabbos for that additional reason of taking medication. But just getting back to the, you know, during the week, just like we have that distinction on Shabbos between Michael Brian and that which is medication, I think that distinction carries over to during the week as well. And wine, or even more, you know, stronger alcoholic beverages, are different at the same time than a cannabis, you know, edible, which is, edibles that are laced with medication. They should be treated differently and viewed differently. But I think there's another distinction here at play, and that is that wine or other alcoholic beverages have a mitzvah function as well. So, like, it's a micro mitzvah, meaning we use, if you think about it, it's odd that we have so many negative connotations with wine and with alcohol. For example, right, the first sin of the Eitz Hadas, according to many opinions of the Gemara was, or one opinion of the Gemara was, what was the Eitz Hadas? It was Geffen Haisa. It was a grapevine. That's why we made Kiddush on wine Friday night, in order to be Masakin for the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. Noach, of course, sinned after the Mabul, when Vayochal Noach Isha Adama, Vayita Kerem, Vayishman Ayan, Vayishkar. Noach becomes drunk. And then we have in Parshas Vayera, the daughters of Lot sin with their father after he becomes drunk. Yeah, Nadav and Avihu enter into Kodesh HaKadoshim. After they're drunk, drunkenness is associated with a lot of, you know, a lot of bad things, a lot of sins in the beginning of the Chumash. At the same time, we do find wine together with many mitzvahs, right? Kiddush Friday night, Havdalah on wine, and alcoholic beverages, Gemar Medina, many other mitzvahs, marriage, Bris Milah, that's a cup of wine, Simchas Yontif and Simcha L'Basav Yain. So we kind of have this love-hate relationship with wine, but at the same time, wine does figure into a lot of mitzvahs. It has a mitzvah role. But we do at the same time have this love-hate, right? All the averus that we associate with wine, you know, a lot of the first averus that we have in the Torah are associated with wine, and perhaps the Torah recorded these episodes in order to show us the really harmful aspects of misusing wine. So there are actually two aspects to wine. There is this love-hate relationship with wine, and Apterov makes that point in the Sefer Ev Yisrael over here in Purim, where he writes, "Kiyesh nebechinos yain." There's really two sides to wine. Echad mitzad kedusha nikra kais yeshuas. The cup of salvation is the cup of wine. At the same time, there's kais hatareila, the cup of poisoning, you know, which is a person who leads a person down the wrong path in life. And in that sense, I think it's similar to other subjects we discussed, like a person who, you know, listens to music. Music opens up the heart. It, like, you know, nichnas yain yatzasoid. But how you use that, that's a vehicle to open up the heart, to you know, to release a few inhibitions. But what a person does after those inhibitions are lowered could either be something really harmful or something, you know, really positive, and that's up to a person what they're going to do with this powerful tool. Like also, you know, even humor, b'dichusa, a joke, it's important to open a shir, the Gemara says, with a mili dibdichusa, with a joke, because it opens up people's minds to hear the Torah. At the same time, if it's a schaik vahavlus, if it's a comedy show, so then that's, you know, that itself is leitzonos, that brings us away from Torah mitzvah. So there are certain things that open up the mind and open up the heart that could be used in a really harmful way or in a really productive way, and wine has that, has that capability. That's why, in fact, Ben Yoyada is a fantastic pshat in the Gemara Maseches Megillah. The Gemara said, as we saw, person chai v'nishu psumi v'puri adu Yoyada ben Arham and Baruch Mordechai, that is referencing these two sides of wine. Because if you think about the Purim story, it starts off with the Suda of Achashverosh, which centers around wine, which was arranged by Haman. And says the Ben Ishchan, the Ben Yoyada, that represents the dark side of wine. Haman was attempting to use wine to bring us away from Torah and mitzvahs, to lower our inhibitions, to encourage us to, you know, say, yeah, even though you're afraid to do this, try this, see what happens. You never know, right? You might enjoy it. So that's the negative side of using wine. The dark side. That's the Or Haman. But then, of course, the Yeshua of Purim happens around the Mishneh Yayin that's arranged by Esther. That represents the positive side of wine, that it opens up our hearts and our mind to allow a Kaddish Baruch Hu, to experience a Kaddish Baruch Hu in a better way. And that's what the Gemara means when it says, Chai v'nishu b'subi b'puri adu al-yada ben Or Haman l'baruch Mordechai, meaning if you don't remember the difference between the good side of wine and the bad side of wine, it's time to stop. But what is wine meant to do? To highlight this difference. Meaning, look how Haman used the wine, and look how we are supposed to use the wine for good things, and all of that is to be masakin for the chait of the Eitz Hadas. According to the Zohar, Haman is like a kind of a reincarnation of the Nachash, of the original sin of the Eitz Hadas, and the way to be masakin, that is by using wine, not for the harmful side of it, the dark side of it, where the Megillah begins, but to using it for the positive side of it, where it ends, with the Yeshua centered around also a Mishta Yain. So we have these two sides of wine, and that's why, by the way, a lot of negative things are associated with it, but a lot of positive things, and a lot of mitzvahs center around wine, because it opens up our hearts to be able, you know, a little bit, Nichnes Yain Yatzat Sayyid, to experience Shabbos and Yantif to a greater degree. But wine is used for those mitzvahs, you know, and therefore it gets a greater pass, even though it does achieve, you know, these kinds of states, because it is used in the context of mitzvah, and that's really where it's supposed to be used. And that's why it does get a pass, is because it's in that context in which we use it. And therefore, since it, you know, has this ability to open up the heart and mind, it depends, everything depends on the context. Everything depends on your machshava, and where are you using this, and what are you using it for? So yes, we use wine for Kiddush, to open up our minds and our hearts to Shabbos. Yes, we use it around tikkun, around simcha, to open up our hearts and our minds to the simcha, to get our Kadosh Baruch Hu in. But since cannabis products have no role in Yiddishkeit, the context inevitably that they're going to be used in is a harmful context. It's a negative context. It will inevitably be not the, you know, the Baruch Mordechai. It will inevitably be the Ora Haman, because since there is no mitzvah context in which that plays a role, inevitably it's going to be arbitrary. It's going to be recreation, and that itself is something that leads us away from the Torah and the mitzvah. So I think that's why, even in moderation, right, being high, being drunk are treated as the same, but even in moderation, there is a difference between the two. One is because one is a food, which I think foods are always going to be treated as differently. The other is that this is a Maichel Mitzvah, and the context and the machshava with which you use wine defines the experience of using wine. And by the way, to use wine in a different context, to use, you know, L'chaims in a different context, you know, it might be just as wrong as using a cannabis product in a recreational setting. I think that would be true. That's why, you know, yeah, anyway. So I think that there are parallels, and the reason why we do treat wine and, you know, and l'chaims a little bit differently is because the context in which Jews traditionally used them was a mitzvah context. The whole notion of using it when a person gets home from a long day of work and having a scotch is not a Yiddish concept. We got that from the outside culture, and might be, you know, just as frowned upon, using moderation, you know, a cannabis edible. What I think could be explored is the range of what's considered to be medicinal uses of cannabis, right? Using cannabis for medicinal uses, for, you know, to relieve pain or nausea or all those other kinds of things is certainly permitted, and kashrut organizations are already giving ashkaf on those kinds of products. You know, and that's part of Nishmat Elohim Nashotekim, to avail ourselves of all of the, you know, the things that Kadosh Baruch Hu put in this world to help us heal and to help us make ourselves healthier. So one could envision expanding that discussion to functioning to a higher degree. And if a person who's suffering from stress and, you know, a little bit of alcohol helps him calm down at the end of the day in order to interact better with the world instead of to withdraw from the world, so then one could envision, you know, that being permitted. And perhaps that's the reality we exist in today. I, you know, I'm sure that yesh v'yesh, I'm sure there are some who abuse it and some who use so in a positive way. And I think that remains to be explored, whether cannabis edibles or cannabis products have a role to play in moderation in a way that enhances people's function and not that it detracts from it or withdraws from the world. And, I, you know, in that sense, if it's not done recreationally, to chill out and remove ourselves from the obligations of Yiddishkeit, but in order to enable ourselves to function better, you know, in a better way, I think there is some, you know, room to explore. I'm not saying it's true yet, but I think there is room to, I don't think the jury's out on that either, but I think there is room as we become, you know, this becomes more legal and becomes, you know, a little bit more regulated and commercialized to see if that is something that is possible. But where it stands now, you know, I think it is becoming high is just as, you know, bad as becoming drunk. Certainly, you know, not, and even in moderation is treated quite differently, and that's why, understandably, the Hashgacha organizations have been reluctant to issue Hashgacha on cannabis edibles. And therefore, that introduces a whole other hurdle, which is that, you know, you have the kashrus problem to deal with. Why should they not issue at least kosher supervision on the food? Issue a kosher supervision on the food, even if itself is something you're not allowed to use for other reasons. The answer is no. A kosher supervision on something with a label, this is kosher, implies it's kosher, not just vis-a-vis the certain simanim in your day that discuss machalos asuros, vis-a-vis all of Shulchan Aruch. and all that goes into Jewish life. So if something is dangerous, if it's poisonous, it can't have hashgacha for other reasons. It's a violation of shmarta lo nafshu sechem. So to here, we have to have a little bit of a broader understanding of what hashgacha represents, that this food is kosher, meaning it's okay to eat, and if there is this dangerous side to it, we really can, of course, give a hashgacha to it. What I think is one final point, which I think is interesting, is, well, what about the argument that, look, people are eating these halavai, we should be able to rein it all in. But we have to acknowledge reality. Reality is people are going to eat cannabis edibles if they aren't doing so already when it becomes, you know, more available. So shouldn't we at least give hashgacha to save them, if even though they're violating all these, you know, these issues we discussed until now, shouldn't we at least give hashgacha on these products to save them from that additional problem of eating tarfos, you know, literally machalos asuros along with it, traditional machalos asuros in the Yoredeya sense, right? Shouldn't we at least prevent them from violating that as a kind of, you know, kol Yisrael areidim, zebazeh? Shouldn't we prevent them from violating that additional Easter? So I don't think that argument carries weight. Why? Because the Gemara says over here in Maseches Bava Kama, Samech Tes Med Aleph, that during Shvius, when people would come into fields of hefker in order to take the produce, so some of the produce was prohibited otherwise, you know, for other reasons other than Shvius, you know. Shvius, the farmer can't work the field. Of course, the produce is all hefker and people come in to take it. But some of it might have been arla. Arla means that it's the first 3 years of the growth of a fruit tree. You're not allowed to eat from the fruit of the tree. Shvius doesn't override arla. So arla exists during Shvius. So even though you're allowed to take the fruits during the field, they're all hefker during Shvius. Arla is arla. And, you know, and with a vineyard, it's 4 years. There's kerem revai. Even netter revai has to be nifta, has to be redeemed. So there's a lot of other issues that could be going on in the field. So during Shvius, when people would come to collect in the fields, the farmers would label what's arla, what's kerem revai, and tell the people, don't take from here, don't take from there. What about during the year, though? Does the farmer have to label in his field what's arla? Say, no, the owner of the field knows what's arla. I know what I'm not allowed to eat, which fruit trees are new. Why would I need it for myself? Says the Gemara, no, maybe it's for the ganav. Maybe someone's going to come into my field, steal my apples, and he won't know that the apples are arla. So maybe in order to help the ganav who's coming into my field, that he shouldn't, he's violating Geneva, at least I should prevent him from violating Kerem Revai or from violating arla. Label the trees, which are arla, which are kerem revai, to help him not, you know, have that additional demerit on his, you know, ledger in the Yeshiva Shomayra of arla of kerem revai. And the Gemara says, no, of course you're not obligated to do that. That's actually a debate in the Gemara. The Gemara says that tzaddikim would do that, that tznuim did do that, but it's not required meikar adin. We pass on Shem Begamlio, who says there, haliteo l'rush of yomus. Let him get full on the arla and, you know, demise. Ah. Halitayo the rush of yomus. You get full on that food, and it'll lead to your own destruction. Meaning, if you're stealing, and you're eating machol asuras along with it, that's not our cheshbon. That's not our cheshbon. Halitayo the rush of yomus. And of course, we don't wish that on anyone. But this teaches us, to a certain degree, that sometimes those who are violating halacha, we're not necessarily obligated, you know, to remove one obstacle in their way, if either way they're going to be violating something, and regardless. So for example, Shalos and Chuvis Rivash over here, Ois Chafalof, that's quoted by the Rama in Yeredeh and Hukas Nida of all places, discusses, well, let's say you have a single girl, right? The halachas of Nida apply whether a woman is married or single. A single girl who, well, you know, is not going to be that religious and might engage in relations outside of the context of marriage. So that's one issue of a panu eboa. Pnuyo to people engaging in relations outside of the context of marriage is always forbidden. But now, if she's not going to be going to the mikvah, she'll be a nida too. Should we open up the mikvah to these single girls who are going to have relations outside of the context of marriage in order to at least remove that additional problem of nida? So the Rivash says, no, we don't do that. Umashin eflesa eklo tiknu tvil pnuyo kadeshuli kashu barabim in order so people shouldn't violate this of nida ain kan makom tama. There's no question here. Shrei kevan shapnuya asura. Since either way is prohibited, adarabo. If we would permit it, we're going to encourage other people to do it who otherwise wouldn't have done it. If you put a hashgacha on an edible, what you're basically saying is it's okay, and therefore many other people would have been deterred from doing it because of the machalos asura side of it, because it doesn't have a reputable hashgacha, are now going to say, oh, it has at least a reputable hashgacha, now they might start doing it. So therefore, we don't allow the pnuya, the unmarried woman, to go to the mikvah because even though there might be some who that will help them, there might be others who is going to lead them in the wrong direction and will encourage them to do it who might not otherwise have done it. But I think there's a more deeper issue that's discussed over here by the Akedas Yitzchak. That's Rabbi Yitzchak Armo, one of the Rishonim, who discusses, well, you know, if a man is going to engage in relations with an Eishes Ish, should we, as a community, they're discussing, there were young men who weren't on the path, I guess they were already off the derech, and they were having relations with Eishes Ish. can't imagine the setting. Okay, but the discussion was, should we hire non-Jewish women to remove the temptation of the Eishes Ish? Because either way, non-Jewish women, of course, is prohibited too for these young men, but it's better than an Eishes Ish. So should we do that? And he says, of course not. He says, one person does it as a private indiscretion. When you, as a tzibor, hire non-Jewish women in order to remove the temptation of the Eishes Ish, now it becomes a chet of the tzibor. We're going to, as a community, sponsor non-Jewish women to have a relationship with those young men who can't control their urges. That turns it into a congregational avera and makes it that much worse. And therefore, writes the Chafetz Yoreh as well. Over here, Ois Rabbeis, Shema Minot, the Chayshon, the Konas HaKlal, Av Shehu Neged, the Konas HaYochid. Even though it's against those individuals who will violate, you know, Machos HaSus, in order to have these cannabis edibles, we are not obligated to give them, we shouldn't, give them a Hashgacha, in order to save those individuals from violating an additional prohibition. Since either way, eating the cannabis edibles or getting high, marijuana itself is prohibited for all the reasons that we mentioned. So since it's prohibited activity anyway, if we would give hashgacha to it, A, it might encourage certain people to do it who otherwise weren't doing it, but at the same time, it might also make something that's a private indiscretion, individual indiscretion, to something that's a congregational issue. But I think one concluding ha'ara, and that is, one we discussed can open up the mind to certain religious experiences, kiddush, right, wedding, and a bris milah. I don't think that the state of being high, even if there is a mystical component to it, has any religious significance at all. I would debate whether it has a mystical component to it. There are those that that think that perhaps it does. I don't think that that's the Lubavitcher Rebbe has a long letter that he wrote years ago to a person where he argued he doesn't think that the experience that one has, even if it seems mystical, that's produced by psychedelics or produced by other substances, is that elevated state that we hope to achieve through Ruchnius and through Dveikus, that they aren't the same thing. But even if it would be, it also doesn't really have that much significance. It isn't what we're striving to achieve. Right? At the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the Pasuk says, Zeh keli ve'anveyu, that they all pointed to Kadosh Baruch Hu and proclaimed, this is our God and we will glorify him. So Chazal say, even Shivcha la'yam mashu lo ro'yi cheskel ben buti, that even the handmaids, right, the maidservants, at the Kriyas Yamsuf saw things that Yechezkel and Avi never saw. They had a greater Giloi Nevuah. So I asked Rav Chaim Shulev, Sichas Musar, if they did, so then why did they call it Shifchas? Right? If they were greater Nevi'im than Yechezkel, why are they called the Shifcha? Rosh Shifcha, yeah, Mashal Rosh Yechezkel. Why is he Yechezkel and Avi and they're a Shifcha? The answer is, says Rav Chaim Shulev, it's because they didn't work to achieve it. It didn't come as part of their life. And therefore they weren't, they didn't build up to it. And therefore they weren't able to integrate it. They weren't able to take it back with them and retain that spiritual high that they achieved at Kriyas Yamsuf. Or, for example, every Jewish baby inside of its mother, right, the Gemara says in Maseches Nida, the Malach comes and teaches him Kol Torah Kula. Right before he's born, the Malach comes and removes the Torah. Right, he taps him on the lip and the Torah leaves. So I ask, according to the name of Chaim Brisker, how come I don't have to stand up for a pregnant lady? Because inside of her womb, inside of her belly, is a young child, right, an uber, a fetus, that knows Kol Torah Kula. So it's the greatest gadol in the world. Why don't I have to stand up for a pregnant lady to stand up for the fetus? So Chaim Brisker said, because, again, that knowledge is fleeting. It's going to go away when the child is born because it didn't take work to acquire it. And it's not that we love work. We believe if you didn't earn it through work that, that it isn't worth anything. What that's coming to teach us is that the type of dveikus, the type of spiritual high that we hope to achieve, is that which comes about through the normal course of events, not by escaping reality, by uplifting our reality, by infusing our reality with spirituality in a consistent and substantive way. If something comes, I happen to not believe that the mystical experience, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't think so either, that's achieved through substances is similar to the religious experience of Dveikus in the first place, but even if it would be, the fact that it was achieved through some sort of medication which is fleeting itself renders it meaningless and insignificant. It's no different than the Shifcha who might have had a Gilui Nevuah at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, but it didn't last with her, or the child who learns Kol Torah Kula in utero, but forgets it when he's born. Something that doesn't come through life, through engaging in a Kaddish Baruch Hu in a substantive way in all of our activities on Shabbos and Yom Tov and everything else that we do is not the type of Ruchni, it's not the type of Dveikus that we're hoping to achieve, and it's not what the Torah desires from us. What we are, what the expectation is what the goal goal and the aspiration is through life, through engaging in life, through different stages of life, to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu at every stop along the way. Okay, Chevesh, Shkoyach, Shkoyach.